Celebrities, athletes, musicians, influencers, CEOs, entrepreneurs, business owners, experts, politicians, and philanthropists. Welcome to Interviews with Arizonans. Thought-provoking and revealing conversations with Arizona's most interesting and influential people. With your host, founder of Phoenix Homes and Hotspots and Alpha Whale Productions, Todd S. Hall. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to podcast.
So I saw this social media post. It was probably like a year ago. And this girl had posted something about how kids, kind of talking about how kids are entitled today. So they drive their parents' car up to a coffee shop and walk inside. And, you know, they buy their $6 coffee and sit down and get on their $1,000, smartphone. They start to text or tweet or whatever about how, America is this terrible country. And it struck me as something that was like, it's so true. You know, I think sometimes people have a tendency to not really understand the privilege is probably a great word, word to use, the privilege that they have for actually living in a country like the United States.
Yeah. And you know what? That's why freedom of speech is the greatest in America.
For sure. For sure. So, Maria Bello, thank you for taking the time to come on to Interviews with Arizonans today. Typically, to this point, I've never interviewed anybody in this style. So this is kind of the first time we've done a Zoom long distance. Interviews with Arizonans is really a podcast for and about locals. But I think that this conversation is a conversation that is for everyone. It doesn't matter where you live or, what state, what city you live in. I think that this is a conversation that everybody really needs to listen to and hear. So that's why I wanted to do this with you today. So again, appreciate you taking the time. You are I don't know exactly what you would call it, but you work with a company called the Dissident Project. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the Dissident Project is?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me to your podcast. The Dissident Project, it's pretty much a group of people that have gone through socialism and communism, and they want to tell their stories. They want to go into all of these college campuses, high schools, to tell people what they lived through while living in socialism. We have so many people talking about what socialism is, but you don't have the stories, you don't have the experience, you don't have people that can tell you, hey, this is what I went through, this is what I lived through, this is what, for example, my family's still going through in Venezuela. And, you hear like, yeah, I mean, Karl Marx, this is what he was trying to talk about, socialism, this is what it means, this is what Google says. But when you have someone that can tell you their stories, that is a little bit more passion. There's passion in there. And you can actually think that, well, what I have been supporting all this time is not what I actually believe. I know that there are so many people out there my age that they say how good socialism is, how good communism is, and how bad they wanted to bring to America. No, you don't. I remember when we first started having COVID coming into the country, and we had all of these lines in the supermarket to be able to get groceries. That was a flashback for me, because that's what I used to do in Venezuela. Like, if I wanted to go to a grocery store, I needed to do a huge line of people to be able to get into a grocery store. I was only allowed to go to the grocery store once a week. So, when you see all of these people trying to get all of this in here, it's just crazy to me to think that they want to live through what I lived through. And I already went through that. I cannot go through the same thing twice.
Yeah. So what is your story? I mean, how did you immigrated to this country from Venezuela? Tell us your story, kind of going back to growing up in Venezuela and transitioning here to America.
Well, as a kid, everything was, perfect. I mean, when you're a kid, you don't think that there's stuff missing. You don't think that your parents are struggling or anything like that. So as I was growing up, my mom was involved in politics in Venezuela. So I had that example of what it was actually politics. And to me, politics is just being able to help people. I saw how my mom worked so hard. And when it was that time of what I want to do when I grow up, I told myself, I want to help people. I want to do politics. I got into politics in Venezuela. I was in high school, and that's what I was doing, politics.
And this was when?
When I was in high school in Venezuela. I was only 16 years old when I got into.
So how many years ago was that? What year was that?
Oh, that was 10 years ago. Okay. I wanted to be in politics. So I started in politics when I was 16, and I thought that if I did something, if I could get involved and try to get rid of the government, I was going to be able to stay at home, and I didn't have to leave the country, and I didn't have to go somewhere else. My dad has been living in the United States since I was a baby. My dad's an American citizen, and thanks to my dad, I became an American citizen even before I have to come here. So I did come to the United States the legal way. I came as an American citizen. I remember I was studying politics, political science, but I was not involved in politics. It was not until 2019 that I started doing trainings in politics. I started kind of getting involved. And when I started hearing people my age saying, oh, socialism is so good, that's when I was like, okay, God, this is the moment that you want me to get in politics, then I will do it. Even though I was not doing politics, I had a feeling that God was calling me to do it because that's what I meant to do. So yeah, I got involved in politics, and here I am, you know, doing a ton of stuff to be able to save this country.
Let me tell you about Phoenix Homes and Hotspots. This is my real estate YouTube channel, and it's the number one real estate resource here in the state of Arizona, and here's why. Let's say you want to put your home on the market, and you contact a real estate agent. Most agents are going to do a pretty good job of marketing the home. The challenge is that's where it stops. Phoenix Homes and Hotspots picks up where the average agent left off. We not only do a phenomenal job marketing the home, but we're going to show through video on our YouTube channel, we're going to show the surrounding community, walking trails, community pools, bike paths, golf courses, whatever that might look like running through the community. But then we're also going to show the lifestyle around it. We're going to show all the local hotspots. Where are the best restaurants? Where's the best shopping? Where are you going to get groceries, gas? Where are the best schools located, and how are they rated near that particular community where you found the home you're looking for? So if you think of yourself as an out-of-state buyer moving into the area, they find your home online, they love the home, but they have no idea what the community or the hotspots or the lifestyle around that looks like, we tie it all together. No gimmicks. Sell your home in X amount of hours. No, we have tens of thousands of buyers waiting to buy your home. This is not gimmicks. This is bulletproof real estate marketing. Also on Phoenix Homes and Hotspots, we talk about the cost of living in the area, pros and cons, and so much more. If you're watching this podcast on YouTube right now, click the top right-hand corner. That will take you to Phoenix Homes and Hotspots to check it out. Or if you're listening on one of the audio platforms, you can look in the description below, or you can go to youtube.com/Phoenix Homes and Hotspots. Check it out. Subscribe. Smash the bell next to the subscribe button. That way we can notify you every time we create new popular videos right there on Phoenix Homes and Hotspots.
You're listening to Interviews with Arizonans, an original Todd S. Hall Alpha Whale production. Now, back to the show.
So one of the things that you mentioned was getting into politics to really kind of, it's not the word that you used, and I don't remember the exact word you used. We were talking about kind of opposing the government or resisting the government or you know, whatever. Again, I don't remember what word you used. But what does that look like? I mean, so what is it about the Venezuelan government today that, you know, obviously it's socialist. I mean, I think if you go, you know, back, and we can talk a little bit about the history of Venezuela and how it became that way. But what does that look like? I mean, why did you feel this need to get into politics and get into government to be able to change the system?
I think it was just to be able to stay at home with my family. And I didn't have to go somewhere else to be able to save my country. Because of all the bad things that were happening, that's what I felt that I needed to do that. I needed to help people, kind of needed to have them open their eyes and making them realize that what they were voting for wasn't what they were exactly going to get. If we go back to that, my grandparents, they used to work for the government in the oil company. And as of now, I get calls from my grandparents saying, we wish we will have listened to you when you told us not to vote for the government.
And so you said when bad things, like the bad things that are happening, and you mentioned, you know, the grocery situation, waiting in lines at a grocery. What is it that's different about Venezuela today that, and I know, you know, you weren't, you know, you probably weren't even born yet in 1999, pre-socialism. But if you're comparing the United States and America today to Venezuela, what are some of those bad things? Like what are some of those things that people that, you know, when you, like you said, when you're talking to kids and they just don't realize, hey, socialism, Marxism, this is where it leads, outside of just waiting in lines at grocery stores and kind of being able to go once a week. What are the things that, what are those warning signs? What do people that think socialism is this great thing, what are they missing?
Well, under socialism, you're not going to have freedom of speech, which is our First Amendment in the United States. Like you mentioned before, there are people on Twitter saying how bad capitalism is and how bad America is, but you have the right to think that way. I mean, it's your freedom of speech. You can do it. In under socialist government, you cannot have freedom of speech. And the other thing is the Second Amendment does not exist in Venezuela, and we have it here in America. If, you know, the Second Amendment, it's what's going to save us from a lot of stuff from the government.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So what are you seeing here? I mean, what are some of the signs that you're seeing, right? I mean, there's a lot of things happening in this country right now that are a little bit new to us, right? I mean, you have, you just talked about freedom of speech, and you have a government now that's trying to silence opposition through creating new policy. You know, a new policy that they're trying to enact is this misinformation board. They're calling it misinformation board, but really anything that doesn't support what they're saying, they're deeming as misinformation. And a lot of times what they've called misinformation over the last 6 years, you know, when you think of COVID and you think of so many different things that have happened over the last 6 years, everything that this particular party that is really kind of starting to lean towards socialism, a lot of the things they've called misinformation have actually come out to be true. So, you know, what are some of the warning signs that you're seeing in the United States right now that make you feel like you need to speak out, you know, through the Dissident Project and really speak to young people about socialism?
A lot of censorship. It's one of the things that I can see. Not just through social media, but just in general, there are a lot of conservative groups in universities that they cannot speak against, you know, these leftist groups. If not, they get censored or they get called names or all of this different stuff. So censorship will be one, and can kind of worry about that, just because, you know, if we lose the First Amendment, then what is the freedom of speech that we get to speak about the things that we don't agree with the government?
Yeah, for sure. I've heard podcasts. There's, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but she's from North Korea. She defected, and crazy story. I mean, her story is wild in terms of how she ended up here in America. But one of the things that she realized after this long journey from North Korea, through China, she went through a couple other countries. She was sold into sex trafficking. And I mean, her story is wild. And then she gets to America and she goes to school. She goes to Columbia, I think it was. And right away, she realizes that they were censoring people's information. Like they were, you know, she was speaking, they were talking about, you know, socialism or communism or whatever it was that they were speaking about. And she started to speak out against it, and they started to silence her as if what she was saying wasn't true. She's like, listen, I've lived through this. if anybody knows what's true and isn't, it's not you, it's me. And so, yeah, like in universities, you know, again, I know now some of this is starting. We used to think about just there's a handful of universities out there that were really kind of this far left wing, you know, these universities that were promoting socialism. And now it seems like it's in a lot of the universities, but now it seems like it's starting to filter into our K-12 as well.
Well, I have a really good example, one of the experiences that I had when I was in college. I remember my political science professor asked us to write a paper about a country. And I said, well, I'm going to do Venezuela because who else will know more about Venezuela than my own self, right? So I read this paper and I was like, oh my gosh, 20 some pages. I got it, you know, inspired to actually say what the truth about Venezuela was. And I gave him my paper. And then when he gave it back to me, I got a 70. And like, huh, professor, why did I get a 70? He's like, well, Maria, you say that Venezuela is a socialist country. Venezuela is not a socialist country. And you're talking bad about Maduro. And you cannot say those stuff in that paper. I was like, professor, my family is going through that right now. I went through that. My family's still there. You know, like, this is actually happening. So that's when I started noticing that, why should I go to school if I'm going to, you know, get bad grades for thinking differently? And everyone in my classroom, my classmates, they were all Bernie supporters. And it just got to the point that that's way before I started doing politics here. And then I just came to realize that I needed to do something. A lot of classmates blocked me from all social medias. They all attacked me when I came out conservative, you know, Republican. It's just insane. The school system is just messed up right now.
Yeah. And like I said, now it seems like they're starting to filter this stuff into the K-12. So it's alarming. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I think we've seen over the last couple of years with this new administration is that there's already been a tremendous amount of pushback, you know, things, especially as it pertains to schools. I think one of the things that you don't want to mess with is a parent. And so, you know, I know that there was that election in Virginia, as an example, that governor's election. That's right. That's your backyard.
I was working in that election.
Yeah, that's your backyard. And you know what, parents, it's like, how far do you have to push people before they start to wake up and realize what's happening around them? You know, it's like gas prices are skyrocketing, inflation's skyrocketing. You have a wide open border of just unvetted people just pouring across the border. You have, I mean, there's all of these things, there's all these warning signs. You have defunding the police and just safety deteriorating in communities. And a lot of those communities are actually, you know, what people would consider a minority community. I always think that that's kind of honestly racist to call a low-income community minority. But that's, you know, that's what they class, that's what, you know, the leftists would classify that as a minority community. And these communities are just getting completely obliterated by high crime. And so anyway, I'm not sure where I was going with that, but I mean, now it's like, I was talking about parents. And yeah, I mean, so I think there are certain things that people are starting to push back on. My concern is probably what your concern is, because you guys are really focused on reaching young people with socialism. And I'm hoping that adults today are starting to see what's happening and they're starting to shift a little bit. And by the way, I'm not calling the Republican Party perfect. I don't think there's such thing as a perfect political party. I just think that if there's one of the two that's not a big government party that's trying to cram this, you know, they're trying to completely change the structure of our economy. There's only one party I think that can save us from that right now, unfortunately. And so anyway, hopefully the tide's turning. But my concern is, again, it's like I said, you know, it's not just in colleges now, it's K through 12. We're seeing this almost every day where there's issues in these schools of them trying to control the mind of these kids, whether it's through COVID, whether it's through, you know, confusing them with race or gender. And so I guess my question is, how do you curb that? Like, I don't have a whole lot of optimism for, I have a 4 and a 7-year-old. I don't have a whole lot of optimism for their future right now. I'm starting to really, truly believe that they're not going to have a chance to grow up in the same world that I had a chance to grow up in.
Homeschool your kids.
Yeah.
That's the solution right now, you know? And the other thing that I was trying to tell you is that LGBTQ, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Because they add the whole ABC to it.
Right.
It's LGBT, whatever, community too. Like, they're trying to teach our kids that it is okay if you don't feel like you are a boy. It is okay if you want to be a girl. It is okay. No, that is not okay. If you're a boy, you're a boy. If you're a girl, you're a girl. That's what it is. There are only two genders.
Right. I just saw something today where there's a California school district that's now incorporated in somewhere. I don't know what grade. I think it was probably in high schools, but they're incorporating a curriculum now that says that there's 8 different genders. I think it's an optional curriculum. I don't think it's a force, but even that, I mean, it's like, where is the science? You know, the people that keep telling us follow the science are the ones that just keep leading us down this, like, there's 8 genders. It's like, so I don't know. Anyway, yeah, it's pretty crazy.
One of the things that I say is that socialism leads to everything. Socialism leads to abortion. Socialism leads to the border crisis. Socialism leads to, you know, a ton of human trafficking.
Right.
All stuff. It is all connected. And the thing that I always say is that for some reason, the leftist says that Hispanics are Democrats. We're not Democrats. We're conservative because we believe in God. We believe in family. And we believe in all of these values that work hard and get what you want. That's our values. We Hispanics are conservative. Some of them might not know it, but the majority of Hispanics, we know we're conservative.
It's amazing how many people you talk to that when you speak with them, they sound conservative. And then when you realize, and then if, you know, eventually it comes out, it's like, oh yeah, I vote Democrat. I'm like, everything that you just spoke out against is what your party is actually did to your community. You know? Yeah. So I have a client that just moved out here from Seattle last year, and really cool, like really, really awesome people. Husband is more conservative. Wife is more, liberal, I guess you would call it. I don't love that term for that side, but she talked about all these things happening in Seattle and why it was time to get out of Seattle. And then, you know, we had long conversations. We became friends, and I found out, you know, like she mentioned, like she votes Democrat, her whole party or her whole family has always voted Democrat. I'm like, you realize that everything that you just said that is going wrong in Seattle is all Democrat policies right now. That's why Seattle has spiraled out of control with crime and all the other things happening there. So you never know. I mean, you're right. Your point is really well taken, because there are a lot of people that, you know, I don't know if you ever listened to Joe Rogan, any of his podcasts, but it's funny because when you listen to him, he doesn't sound conservative, but he sounds like a guy that probably votes Republican. But he was a Bernie Sanders once upon a time. He considers himself liberal, but a lot of the things that he's waking up to are things, again, that are very leftist, that it's kind of interesting to hear people complain about all the things, but then still vote that way. It's pretty shocking.
Yeah. I mean, they're not doing anything to change the way that they think, to change the way that they vote. It is insane how many people think that just because I'm Hispanic means that I vote Democrat. I'm like, no. I have never in my life voted Democrat. I will never even be close to a Democrat. Like, I want nothing to do with those people. I mean, yeah, once you get here, you probably don't know. Because in Venezuela, it's like either you are against the government or with the government. There's no in between. Either you're against or with. Obviously, I'm all against the government. Once I got here, obviously, I had to study like the whole politics and how it works in here. But people think that because it's called Democrats, it means democracy. That's not true.
Which is why I don't like to use the word liberal for that side either. I think leftist is probably the best word for that side now. Progressive and liberal, I don't think describes it anymore either.
Yeah. And you know, that there's so many people out there that it's funny because every time I do these interviews and I talk a little bit about what I went through in Venezuela, all this stuff, people are just like, no, she's just one of those rich kids, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm just another citizen, worry about what's happening in America. And I don't want to go through the same thing. And trying to tell you what I went through, what I lived through, what my life was like in socialism. So you don't make the same mistake.
Yeah. And you know, I think that most people at their core, I always think, you know, if we could all rewind ourselves back to 10 years old and take all the politics out of it and take all the values of today. And again, I don't think either of these parties are perfect. I really don't. I don't think there's anything perfect about the Republican Party. In fact, I would love to see a third party come in and be a much more centrist party that really describes the values of most Americans, which is somewhere in the middle of this far left, far right pull. This, you know, it's kind of a big tug of war between the two sides. So I personally, I would love to see another party come in, but I think if most people rewind themselves back to when they're 10 years old and you say, hey, this is what's, you have option A or option B. I just don't think that, you know, and again, taking the politics and kind of the media manipulation and all the other stuff out of it. I just don't think that when you're young and innocent, that this is the road you would choose. I think that you actually kind of have to get indoctrinated to this idea that, you know, hard work doesn't matter anymore. We all just need to have equity of outcome and some of the things that, you know, whatever it is. I mean, we could pick almost any topic. But I think not only are Latinos, conservative, right? God, family, capitalism, right? Opportunity. I mean, why are so many people crossing the border right now if we're so racist, right? Why are people flooding to our border? They're looking for opportunity. They love what America offers in terms of having equal opportunities. I think the black community is the same way. These people are capitalists at heart, you know, and so I think all cultures deep down love the freedom that capitalism offers. I just think that there's a lot of manipulation around that. It's also interesting with young people. If you ask a young person, what do they dislike or hate about capitalism? I don't know. And I'm curious to hear some of the things that you hear, but one of the things that I've heard the most is, well, capitalism is built on greed. I'm like, well, what exactly do you think socialism is built on, right? I mean, the only difference between capitalism and socialism as it pertains to greed is capitalism. Yes, there are corporations that are greedy and there's some bad corporations out there. I get it. I'm not saying capitalism is perfect either. It's the most perfect system I've seen. It's the most perfect system I think that's ever been. You know, I mean, when you look at it historically, I think it's worked better than any other system. But yes, there's going to be some greed involved anytime you give people power. But would you rather have corporate greed or would you rather have government greed? Because under socialism, if the government fails, which is what they saw in Venezuela, right? Or what your family has seen in Venezuela is when the government fails, everybody fails. In America, if a corporation fails, yes, everybody working for that corporation now has to go find new jobs or whatever, but the whole country doesn't melt down. And under socialism, if the government fails, everybody fails. So I think that's what kids are missing. I mean, if you think about our government right now, we're $31 trillion in debt. You could make a really strong argument that our government, our U.S. government has already failed. And the only thing keeping it afloat is corporations. So I don't know. I mean, what do you hear when you're out talking to kids? I mean, what are they saying? These kids that really think that socialism is going to be what saves America. What do they say about capitalism and socialism? I mean, what is the, you know, what is their philosophy on that?
Well, I think that the first thing is they don't know what capitalism is and they don't know what socialism is. I think they know, but they don't. They think that, let's go back to AOC. They think that it's just tax the rich, right? That's what AOC's slogan is, tax the rich.
Yeah, everything is unfair. We got to tax, which actually doesn't help anybody, but yeah, I mean, it does. It's not like it brings any, it's not like that's lifting anybody up.
Yeah. So it's tax the rich, and she has all of this merchandise, this $70 sweater that just said tax the rich. Stupid people, socialist, democratic, socialist, whatever you want to call it, because I think that if you put it democratic, that the word democratic before socialism, that sounds better and it's way better, but in reality, it's the same thing. It's all tax the rich. And then when it comes to when you ask them, what is socialism? What is the definition? And they're like, take money from, in reality, it's just capitalism will give you the opportunities to get to the freedom that you're aspiring to get, but socialism will take away that freedom. For example, what socialism did to me is that it took away a lot of opportunities. And what did America do? It gave me those opportunities that my country couldn't give me.
Right.
I think that's the easiest way to say it. America and capitalism gives you opportunities. Socialism and Venezuela take away those opportunities. I have friends back in Venezuela where they're either going to school or they got to start working because they cannot do both at the same time. So there are 1,000 people in Venezuela that they cannot even go to school or finish a degree because they have to work to be able to eat and bring food to the table.
Yeah.
Funny how AOC says that, you know, when I think it was a hurricane that happened in Puerto Rico. And then she was asking people for money to give her grandma to get a house, blah, blah, blah. But she has a Tesla. She lives in Navy Yard, which is one of the most expensive neighborhoods in Washington, D.C. And you know, that is ridiculous. That is a little bit stupid, if you want to call it that way. I'm trying to say, like, you know, but it's just that you're taking away from people that have worked so hard all of their life. Because that's what happened in Minnesota. My family was a middle-class family. We had everything we wanted. We had everything we needed. And it got to the point where my grandmother had to rent her house to strangers to be able to eat because she didn't have any money to feed herself or her family.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing with that is that, you know, that word free gets people, but I think they don't realize that what they think of as free today, 10 years from now, they'll have paid back in 10 times more than what they received. Yeah. And so I think that people just don't realize that, you know, this word free sounds great, but the money has to come from somewhere. And it's like you said, then they think, well, you know, if these corporations and these billionaires pay it. But the reality is that we've never seen welfare work. Welfare, giving money away, has never lifted people into success. And I think that's another thing that people are missing with that.
How much money are we spending in just 1 year in all of this welfare to all of these people? And we have been doing it for years and years and years. These people will die and they will still be on welfare.
Yeah. Yeah, they're hooked on it. I mean, and again, that's kind of the challenge with the Democrat Party today. And actually, it's kind of why I've never voted Democrat. You know, the party is much different today than it was if you go back to like Bill Clinton in the 90s. It's much, much, much different. But even then, this idea of hooking people on the government or you know, making them dependent on the government, I don't see that as a compassionate way to help people. Now, with that being said, neither party is really doing a great job of taking these lower income folks and helping them build success. And I think that there are ways to do that. I think the Republican Party's policies, like, you know, a lot of people really hate Donald Trump. I get the personality conflict there, but when you actually break it down and look at his policies, there were a lot of really positive things happening for everybody. You know, the boat was actually rising instead of taking everybody at the top and bringing people down. The boat was actually rising. And so, you know, from a policy standpoint, even if you take socialism out of it, it's one of the reasons I've never really believed in the Democrat Party. I believe that you know, a lot of their policy just promotes laziness and dependence and really strips people of their dignity. And that's kind of some of the core values that I just have never believed in.
Well, we see this U.S. candidate. She's running for Senate in New York. And I saw her video. I don't know if you know who I'm talking about. Her family's from Colombia and Puerto Rico, so she's Hispanic. And she posted this video the day that she won the primaries. And she's like, socialism will win. No, socialism destroys and socialism kills. That's what socialism does. So it's just funny to see all of these people thinking that socialism will get them somewhere. It's not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah. And speaking of candidates and going back to kind of the Latino community, it's interesting what's happening in Texas right now. You know, I know Southern Florida is always, not always, I shouldn't say always. I think Southern Florida, South Florida in recent years, because the population is so heavy Cuban and, you know, in some of these countries that have this oppression from decades upon decades in Cuba, right? How many, 60, 70 years now of just complete oppression in Cuba? And so it's interesting that, you know, that they were voting Donald Trump. And again, I'm not saying Donald Trump. I see, for me, I don't vote for people in party. I vote for policy and idea. And I mean, that's just my philosophy. Policy and idea, I don't care if it's a Democrat. If they have the right policies and ideas, I'll vote for them. I don't care about people and party. It's not, I think that that's where we've gone wrong in this country. Unfortunately, again, we only have two options. But it's interesting what the shift in South Florida, when because the folks in South Florida can actually see what you're seeing. They see all of this stuff coming and they're running from the Democrat Party because they're like, no, you're not dragging us back into socialism. That's what we left that. We have no plans to go back. Then in Texas, you have a whole different phenomenon happening there because they're seeing this border crisis. And so the Latinos are going, wait a minute, we came to this country legally, right? And just letting millions of people in a year cross the border unvetted, completely unvetted, letting them cross unvaccinated when we're making people to go to work in this country. You know, the airlines are in disarray right now because they lost a bunch of employees and pilots because they were trying to make them get vaccinated. That happened in the military. Yet we let these people pour across the border, unvetted, unvaccinated, and the South Texas Latinos seem like they're pretty fed up with it. And so it's interesting what's happening. Unfortunately, here in Arizona, I don't see that same type of movement yet. We did have a Latina that was running in one of the districts here for Congress. I don't believe she moved on from the primaries, but you know, I call some of our minorities out here, you know, the Latinos and some of the Black candidates out here, I call them Gallegites. There's a guy by the name of Ruben Gallego who is a congressman here. He kind of runs the downtown Phoenix. His district is basically downtown Phoenix and some of those areas, the kind of inner city areas. And, you know, the idea is victimhood and government dependence and all that stuff. And then all these, and so a lot of the minorities here just kind of parrot and echo, they want his endorsement. So they parrot and echo him word for word. And unfortunately, I don't see the same type of movement happening here in Arizona quite yet, but I'm hoping that big Latino movement of more, you know, Latinos African Americans or Black Americans start to run for Congress and Senate seats here in the state of Arizona as Republicans to really kind of shift that tide. But anyway, I don't know what your thoughts on that are, but it's interesting to start to see that really large Latino shift, especially on some of these border states.
Yeah, and we have Jessly Vega running for Congressional District 7, actually my district here in Virginia. She's Hispanic and she's running against Abigail Spanberger, who has been for so many years and as our congresswoman. But with the border crisis, a problem with the border crisis that, like you said, we are forcing Americans to get the vaccine. If not, they are getting fired from their jobs. But we have all of these people coming through the border. And we also have a ton of people that we don't know their background. We don't know if they're good people or bad people. We have no idea. We have drugs coming through the border. We have narcos coming through the border. We have all of these, you know, insane things that put Americans in danger.
Meanwhile, do you remember last year, the Cubans were fighting back against their government last year? Yeah. And they started to, you know, you started to see a little bit of a migration pattern from Cuba. Interesting how fast our government shut that down. Do you remember that? Our government shut the Cubans down fast. And you look at that and you say, we're leaving an open border for anybody and everybody to come through that border at the South. Yet the Cubans want to come, people that are really, truly oppressed and have been oppressed for, again, more than half a century. And they want to come, but why would our government shut them down and not the other people, right? And so when you start to talk about motivation, you go, well, Cubans are not going to vote for, they're not going to vote for socialism. They're not going to vote for this stuff. Right. Yeah. So that was a pretty fascinating thing to watch how it's like, come one, come all, but not if you're Cuban, not if you're not going to vote Democrat. Right.
No, if you're not Venezuela, no, if you're not Nicaragua, no, if you're not from any of those countries that are actually living through socialism. But the other thing is we get all of these people coming to our country illegally, and then we have international college students that wish to stay in the country, but we're not giving them the opportunity to, after school, they can stay here and get a job and do something good for society and do something good for America. But we're letting all of these people who we have no idea who they are through a country that will put Americans in danger. That is one of my concerns, that all of these people are putting Americans in danger.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's worth going back just a little bit and talking about Venezuela and how Venezuela got to, you know, one of the things I know that the Dissident Project, I know you have speakers from Cuba, you have speakers from, I think, Hong Kong, North Korea, Venezuela. I'm really fascinated with by Venezuela because Venezuela is, it's new. I mean, relatively new in terms of socialism, right? 20 years. And I think that Venezuela is the lesson that Americans should probably learn. I mean, if you want to look at the most recent history, look at what happened to Venezuela. So correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding was prior to the year 2000, Venezuela was one of the most, one of the wealthiest countries in the world per capita. Is that correct? I mean, in terms of just the history?
Yes, and oil and everything. It was one of the richest countries in South America.
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of the richest countries in South America. So in 1999, Chavez was elected. Is that so? Chavez ran on, in fact, I don't believe he actually ran on socialism. I believe he kind of ran as a moderate, but then shifted the country into socialism. I mean, you probably know better than me. I'm just trying to kind of take people through it. People that don't actually understand the history of Venezuela. How did Venezuela go from one of the wealthiest countries in the world per capita pre-2000 to now having people fleeing the country and literally, you know, being oppressed in that country just 20 short years, you know, just 20, I mean, it's been happening, it's been going on for a while, but now 20 years later, the country's in disarray.
Yeah, he was elected in 1998. People elected him. Then he got to 1999 and, you know, years went by and he started changing things. He changed the constitution, saying that a president can be in power for 7 years instead of 4 years. He changed the constitution, he changed our currency, he changed a ton of stuff in the country. And if we go back to 1992, there was a coup that Chavez did to the former president by that time. And he tried to kill him and his family. And my thought is, if you see someone that is trying to kill the president at the time and kill hundreds of people in the Capitol, because that happened too the next day, there were like hundreds of people laying on the street because of what happened the night before dead. Why would you elect that person into power?
Right.
That happened. Then 2012 came, Chavez died. They elected Maduro. I was doing campaign against Maduro as well and against Chavez. So I was seeing all of those things. Maduro got into power and things just went even worse than what was into power.
Yeah. So from what I read, the Chavez era didn't go terribly awry only because, so basically what happens under socialism is that's when the government takes control of production, right? And so what the government did, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but what the government did is they took control of the production of oil, which was what made the country so wealthy to begin with. So Chavez basically took production of the oil. He didn't necessarily make people wealthier, but he just basically offered a bunch of handouts and free stuff and whatever. And he seemed to be a charismatic individual from everything I read, and people kind of followed him. When he passed and Maduro took over, apparently Chavez had the luxury of oil prices being really high during his time in power. And then Maduro, once oil prices plummeted, again, it's like I said earlier, once the government fails, oil prices plummeted. And that's kind of when everything really, truly took a turn for the worst. And again, when the government fails, everybody fails. And that's basically, in terms of what I've read, that's kind of what happened. Is that how you view that?
Yes, people loved him. People loved Chavez. He could be in national television for hours and hours and hours, just talking crap, pretty much. One of the things about him is that he you think that you're helping people, but in reality, you're just making people lazy. Like what were we talking about, welfare? That's what Chavez used to do back in Venezuela to the low-income people. Just give them welfare every month, and you know, they will just be waiting for the welfare to arrive. One of the things too is that if there was a 16 years old woman and she got pregnant, Chavez will, well, the government will give her help for each kid that that person had. So thing is, it's okay to be a teen mom, have more kids, we'll give you more help, you know. Yeah, that's pretty much what it went through. You know, with Chavez, socialism was, if not really, but if we can say it this way, socialism was taking into the country slowly. Once Maduro got into power, it just went so fast that in a moment we were just like, oh my gosh, what is happening?
But it seems as if it seems like Chavez just kind of got lucky because oil prices were high. And again, this is based on my readings, but it seemed like oil prices were high during his time in power. And shortly after he passed and Maduro took over, oil prices plummeted. And so it seems as though Chavez was only actually successful because of high oil prices. If oil prices would have plummeted in 2000 or 2001, socialism would have, I mean, Chavez wouldn't have been as successful as he was either, I don't believe.
Yeah, it would have been a whole different story.
Yeah. The other thing that I think this was in Venezuela, when we talk about the Second Amendment, you know, and again, thinking about what's happening here in America, where we defund the police, we leave the borders wide open to completely unvetted individuals, where they've actually caught people, you know, at the border that are on, you know, terrorist watch lists. Think about the people that they haven't caught that have crossed that border. So it seems like our government here in the United States now, that this current government has left us as citizens very vulnerable. You know, defund the police, district attorneys now being elected in some of these states where they're not prosecuting crimes, they're turning criminals right back over on the street, violent criminals right back on the street to literally days later to commit violent crimes again. And it really seems like the objective here is chaos. You know, if you're really watching this subjectively, you say, look, this is all chaotic. There seems to be a mission of chaos here. Then you say, you know what, on top of that, we're just going to, as a law-abiding citizen, we're now going to come in and confiscate your guns, right? I mean, it started with assault rifle, you know, AR-15s. Joe Biden just recently said, hey, you know what? I think I want to add 9mm to that list. It's the most popularly owned handgun in this country for self-defense. And so the reason I bring up the Second Amendment is because I believe it was Venezuela. Several years ago, I watched, because I know that part of that process in Venezuela, I want to say it was around 2008, and I might be wrong, but it seems like somewhere in that Chavez era, mid-Chavez era, they started to disarm their citizens. So literally, you know, there's no way for citizens to fight back against the corrupt government. What are your thoughts on the Second Amendment and what you saw or what you know of Venezuela and what you're seeing here?
Well, we saw so many, well, we're still seeing in Venezuela how people are trying to defend themselves. People are trying to go and protest against the government. They cannot do it because someone's going to end up dead because the government, the government and the criminals are the only people that are able to have guns. I remember when I was a kid, so many times I got robbed and I had a gun pointed at me so many times. I think it was about three times. And, you know, when I got to the United States, I was so scared of guns. I was literally so scared of guns because of all the things that I went through in Venezuela. But one day I just understood that why guns are so important. And it's so you can defend yourself and then you can defend your family.
What about the Constitution in general? You know, there's people that say, well, the Constitution was founded in the 18th century and it's outdated. The founders were slave owners. And what do you say to people that think that the Constitution is just outdated, that it needs to be amended? I mean, basically across the board, or they just want to tear out amendments, whether it's the First Amendment we talked about earlier, the Second Amendment that we just talked about. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, our Constitution was written so that the people were in control, not the government. And it seems like there's a lot of Americans now that are willing to give up their rights to the government. It's like they trust the government more than they trust anything else. So just curious what your thoughts are of people that think that the Constitution just needs to be torn up and we just need to burn it down and start over.
No, we shouldn't do that. But going back to Venezuela, people voted. Well, because I'm going to say people, because I didn't vote for that. People voted for Chavez to change the constitution, and we let him. We let him do that, and we see all of the consequences now. And then, if we do that in the United States, then as you know, we have Venezuela example. We see what happened when Venezuela changed the constitution. Is that what we want to get? Is that what we want to do? I think that when the government tells you, I will take care of you, I will do all of these things for you, I think families are the only ones, like you are the only one that is in charge of taking care of your family. No one more than yourself will be able to take care of your family. Like if you get a guy coming through your door because he's going to rob you, like he's going to get into your house, what do? You defend yourself because you're defending you and you're defending your family. The cops might not even get here on time. They might not get there on time. So what are you going to do? You're going to defend your family. And how do you do that? By having a gun.
One of the things that sticks in my head was Joe Biden, his first address to the country after he took office. He said something that it honestly, it haunts me. And it's shocking to me that more people didn't pick up on it and really push back on it. He said, right inside of a speech, he read it off of a teleprompter, and he said, "We the people are the government." And it's just, wow. I mean, first of all, you couldn't be more out of touch, but second of all, that's actually how they, you know, that's actually how this government views the Constitution, and it's how they view the people. And the fact that not every single American didn't stand up and say no, you know, or really push back on that. Some people didn't even catch it. Some people just let it brush right off. That was shocking to me. And then another thing that was really alarming to me, again, that sticks with me, is something Kamala Harris said in a debate, one of the presidential debates. She interrupted an argument. I don't know if you remember this, but she interrupted an argument. She had kind of like her prepared, what they call zingers, right? That prepared one liner that she could throw in. And she said, "Guys, people don't want to listen to us argue. They want to know how we're going to put food on their table." And I was just like, this is not going to go. If these people take power, this is not going to go well. You know, if you have to rely on the government to put food on your table, if that's really where we're at in this country, we're in a lot of trouble. And again, people clearly didn't pick up on it, because here we are. And that's kind of what they're trying to do, is really take that ultimate power. But one of the things I wanted to mention through that is, and I think, you know, Venezuelans know this as well as any other country that's gone through socialism or communism, is that once you give the government that power, the road to getting it back is almost impossible. And you know, you can look at Cuba as a great example. Venezuela's 20 years in and you guys haven't been able to do it. And Cuba is going on a century. They're between a half a century and a century now of complete communism in Cuba. So what are your thoughts on that, in terms of just, you know, giving the government that kind of power and trying to, you know, every little bit you give them, that's probably power as the people you're not getting back.
I mean, it's 6.8 million Venezuelans out of the country, 6.8 million Venezuelans somewhere else, not in their country. I mean, you give the government power, yeah, and they will take everything away from you. And yeah, that Venezuela has been in a socialist, well, at this point, a communist country for 23 years. Like you said, Cuba has been for 60 some years, Nicaragua, the same thing. And that's what government does. They just take and take and take until they just destroy you completely.
What do you say to somebody that says, you know what happened in Venezuela? We're the United States of America. What happened in Venezuela can never happen here. What do you say to somebody that says that?
It can happen, because the same thing we said in Venezuela. That's not going to happen here, because, you know, at the beginning of Chavez's presidential term, we saw him so many times with the Castros. And we said, oh, and Cuba told us, they warned us about socialism, about the Castro. We're like, oh, that's not going to happen here. Look at where we are right now. It is so easy to get a country to be socialist. but it's so hard to get rid of that socialist government.
Do you see the beginning signs of that? I mean, the last 18 months to me seems like the tip of the iceberg. Like if a country were to go socialist, it seems like the last 18 months haven't been full-blown socialism, but it seems like it's been a small stepping stone or almost like a little test run into socialism. You know, the other thing that we haven't talked about is COVID lockdowns. I mean, that almost seemed like a test run to see, hey, what will people really tolerate? How far can we actually push people? And so the last 2 years, to me, when you watch what they've done with oil production, with inflation, with COVID lockdowns, I mean, we could talk about so many different things that we won't have time to talk about. But are you seeing, is it alarming to you? I mean, are you concerned? Are you concerned with what you're seeing? And if so, like what, I don't know what my question is there. My question is, are you concerned and are you seeing the same thing that I'm seeing?
Yeah, I'm seeing some stuff. And I think that's why it's important to go out and vote. And it is important that you make the right choice. I think it is so important that we're electing a lot of conservative into Congress, into the Senate, and we're getting a lot of conservative people out there that have the same concerns that you and I as citizens have. And I think it is important that we always defend our country.
Maria Bello, tell us where, so Dissident Project, tell us the website. What do you want to promote? What do people need to know about the Dissident Project? How do we get more awareness out into our communities? Whatever you want to promote, tell me now, maybe the website and anything else that you want to talk about.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at the website right now because I don't remember. But the website, I believe, is dissidentproject.org. You can look at our website, look at what we do. You can definitely book one of the speakers if you would like them to go to your college campuses, to high school, and then we'll talk about all the experiences that they went through socialist and communist governments, and they will tell you their personal life story.
So if you're watching on YouTube right now, I have the website up, dissidentproject.org. You can learn about them. So just kind of the tabs, you can learn about them. There's a blog site, actually really good information on the blogs. There's some videos and different information there, materials. And then there's a donate button. So you guys are a nonprofit. Tell us a little bit more about like the donations and what that goes to. And
well, we're a nonprofit and that will go to being able to get one of those speakers into your college campus and speak for free.
Yeah, you guys literally fly around the country and speak in these college campuses for free, but obviously that you need donations to be able to do that.
Right.
Anything else that you want to promote, any other resources that people might find valuable that you guys are working with? Do you have like a YouTube channel or social media, anything else?
Yeah, there is social media. Everything is through Dissident Project. And I think in the website, if you scroll down, our Twitter, Instagram, Facebook page, it's all in there. So as soon as people go into the website, they can see all of this stuff and they can follow us and, you know, our personal social media. And I'm always putting stuff about, you know, what I'm doing and all of the filming that I'm doing with all of other different nonprofits as well.
Okay. Do you have anything in closing, anything that you think is important or valuable for people to know that we haven't discussed, anything I haven't asked you or that you think anything that people might want to know that you might talk about on college campuses that we didn't have a chance to talk about?
Yeah, I think people don't know what they have until it's all gone. I think, you know, we have all this beautiful country and we have all of these beautiful rights. And we, again, as I said, we have the freedom to speak and freedom of speech and say whatever we want, even if it is against or in favor of the government. We have all of these beautiful things that we can do. We have the right to vote. And if we don't like someone, we can just vote them out and get someone better. And you don't have this under socialism. It's hard enough for people like myself that they have to leave their country. They have to leave everything that they have been used to. They have to leave their family to go to another country to be able to get the opportunities that their country couldn't give them, like future and education. That's why I left Venezuela, because I couldn't have all these opportunities.
Maria, thank you so much for taking the time. I hope people take your words seriously. You know, I think that it's like you just said, and like we've talked about, you know, you give the government this power and it's not going to come back. I love how you concluded kind of how we started with that social media post, and which is, you know, you take a lot of things for granted, and once they're gone, the same people, if we go full blown socialism, the same people that are fighting for socialism today will be the same people out in the streets with their kids and grandkids 20 years from now when they're waiting in food lines fighting against the government. And hopefully it doesn't have to come to that. Hopefully people start to wake up sooner rather than later. But again, thank you so much for taking the time.
No, thank you. And, you know, have a great day.
Best to you. Thanks.
Thanks.
If you enjoyed this show, remember to subscribe if you haven't already and share this interview. You never know when you might change a life. If you'd like to get involved in the conversation, you can watch this full podcast episode in our Interviews with Arizonans YouTube channel and engage by liking, sharing, asking questions, and commenting on this or any other interview on YouTube. Thanks for listening to Interviews with Arizonans. Remember, keep asking questions until you get the real answers. We'll see you next time.